Welcome back to the A10 Talk Podcast. I'm Sam Basil, joined as always alongside Kaylee Godek and Daniel Frank. And we're now 2 days in to the Atlantic 10 Women's Basketball Championship from Delaware. This weekend, we've got the final weekend of regular season games on the men's side. It is March. It is tourney time. And I'm excited. I know you two are excited, but let's elaborate. How are you two feeling tonight?
I'm feeling pretty good. I think some of these basketball games I've watched the past few days have taken a little bit of time off my life with how close some of them have been, specifically that George Washington at the end definitely scared me like crazy, and that Loyola Chicago one yesterday. I think both of those really took time off my life. But honestly, it's been awesome. Unfortunately, I'm not able to be there in person, but I just want to give a shout out to everyone who is: Zach Weiss, we have David Korn, Jacob Munch, and Natalie Heverin, is it?
Mm-hmm.
Daniel?
For now, not for much longer. She'll be Allegra for long.
Yeah. All of them are doing coverage down there from A10 Talk and the Next. So,
plus Andrew from Pod 63.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Andrew from Pod 63 and also from A10 Talk. Thank you. I knew there was one I was forgetting. So they've been doing wonderful coverage down there. They've been putting out tweets as fast and rapidly as they can after every timeout or a dead ball. And Daniel and I have been trying to keep up with their retweeting of all of it, but it's mainly been me just because I've had the more flexible schedule of just being able to sit at a computer all day besides doing like work on a paper.
Yeah. And I got to kick off the show tonight. I know the focus of this podcast is going to be on women's basketball, as it should be. However, I gotta give it to my friend Sam here a little bit.
Yeah, and you're going to yell at me
Mason
in like 5 minutes.
That Mason Fordham men's game on Wednesday night. First of all, three-hour long game.
Fordham's only their second overtime game of the season. Their only game of conference play.
Crazy
or only
game.
Overtime game of conference play.
Crazy
yeah.
game. Y'all didn't make a field goal for almost 17 minutes. And still almost won. Sam, how are you feeling about that game? I'm curious what your thoughts were from your perspective. Because being there, I was dying and it was awful.
It was tough. It was a tough game to analyze. Because like the Davidson game, in which Fordham also struggled from the field, but especially from three, that was a great defensive game. I mean, the first, you know, they were up 8-6, right, at the first media timeout, and then it was still 8-6 at the next media timeout.
Yep.
But Fordham's first 8 points were off of Mason turnovers.
And it was 8-2 like that. I mean,
yeah, it was a quick 8-2, then Mason climbed back, and then obviously they took control, and then pretty much led for the rest of the game. But I think this is kind of like that game was, you know, not in a way that it was not in Fordham's favor, a perfect example of where Fordham wins and where Fordham can really struggle in turnovers and fouls. And you know, Fordham is a team that tends to turn the ball over, you know, but as long as they can bounce back, and as long as for every turnover that they commit, if they force a turnover in their favor, then they're still alive. I mean, they're a very physical team. They'll hack at players. They'll really, you know, they like to play rough. They like to play really
physical
on
game.
The ball. It is, yeah, they're a very.
We almost came to blows
team.
A couple times there. I mean,
and I think it works in Fordham's favor. The only problem is you know, generally depending on the officiating crew that you're going to get, you know, you're probably gonna get fouled. You're probably gonna call for a lot of fouls. And you know, if not, if the officiating crew feels it's like a little bit even in terms of the physicality, they kind of let the game go. Which I felt like they were kind of letting the game go a little bit.
And they let it go too much.
It got out of control. I think it worked in both teams' favors. But as long as Fordham is drawing fouls at the same rate they're committing fouls and forcing turnovers at the same rate that they're committing turnovers, that has kind of been a huge key to their success, you know, along with, you know, I think a lot of improved shooting performances. I've got actually a piece coming out this weekend about, you know, leading up to Fordham's final game. I mean, a guy like Antrell Charlton, right? he's increased his efficient field goal percentage by 10% from last year to this year. So as long as they can keep doing that and work the physicality in their favor, then they're going to be having a good time against a guy like Josh Oduro, who I think, you know, by a lot of marks, you know, especially considering how much of an influence Dave Paulson has had on this current team's game plan. I mean, I feel like a guy like Josh Oduro would fit really well on a Fordham roster that plays like the Rams, wouldn't you say? I mean, he was really physical. He was really dominant in the paint, just kind of serving as that wall, and he gave the Rams some trouble. So overall, not the prettiest game from both teams, but I think one that Fordham can learn a lot from. And also, I said this actually on a Spaces last night with some Mason guys like Petey Buckets and a couple of people from By George. I think this is another great chapter in what I feel like is becoming a budding Fordham-Mason rivalry. I think I've said it before on this podcast. I've said it to you definitely like in person or just like off to the side. I think the way that these two programs are developing and the timing in which these two programs are developing really sets the table for them to really be in each other's way over the next couple of years. I thought maybe George Washington might be in the mix for that as well, but I'm still kind of reluctant to see that happening. But who knows? You know, I think these three programs, I think, have been really hungry for consistent success in the A-10 for a long time. And the fact that they're all kind of approaching that, I mean, look, Fordham's got their best season ever, right, in Atlantic 10 play. So, I mean, Fordham's definitely there. And Mason is getting there. GW, I think, might be on their way there as well. I think it bodes well for a really fun, you know, kind of micro group in the Atlantic 10 that's going to produce a lot of physical, intense, and fun games for fans of all three teams. So that was kind of my thoughts on that game. Look, they still got a chance to clinch the double bye, talking about the Rams. They just need a win against Duquesne, and then they're there. Depending on how things go, you know, if they don't beat Duquesne, they could be in the sixth seed. It's really weird right now the way the standings are right now. A lot of the scenarios, there is no way Fordham can be the fifth seed, but there's scenarios in which they can be the third, fourth, and sixth.
Don't you just love math?
I absolutely love it. So a lot of interesting scenarios that we'll get to in a little bit, but first I want to kind of give a quick bearings on the women's basketball tournament. So day two just concluded, the second round. The three of us put our graphics, our bracket graphics out on the A10 Talk Twitter, on Wednesday morning, you know, ahead of the first round. And, you know, Podcast 63, dear friends of ours, you know, contributors to A10 Talk as well, made a comment that I think was totally fair, saying that it was our brackets were a bit too chalky for their liking. And while I agree in some parts, I mean, I think the three of us all have either UMass or Rhode Island kind of taking it. I mean, I know I have Rhodey. KG, you've got UMass. Daniel, yeah, you've got UMass.
Me and Kaylee have identical brackets completely by chance.
Yeah, completely identical.
Still perfect through 2 days, so...
Look, yeah,
I'm knocking on wood right now, Daniel, because I'm sorry, I would like to have a perfect bracket in something for once, please!
All of our semifinalists are top four seeds. You know, we've each got a one or two seed winning the whole thing. And as someone who's been making brackets for, like, 11, 12 years now. I mean, since I was a kid in elementary school, I've always hated going chalk. It's nothing saps my self-confidence more than looking at a bracket that I've made. No, not even because, you know, I'm doubting my own knowledge. I'm trusting my own knowledge and the resources that I pull up, the stats that I pull up. But more than anything, it's just me knowing that college basketball sucks. And it never goes the way you want. And that's why I love it so much, because it just pounds me to the ground every single time. I think I'm doing well, and then it just completely flips the script on me. And while I never win my pool, I'm having a lot of fun. So let's take a look at our brackets. And, you know, adding on to that, while I was nervous about going pretty chalk in this bracket, I feel like the way that this tournament is set up this year and the top four seeds, it really sets it up to end like that. So let's get a quick breakdown. So heading into the quarterfinals, you two both have perfect brackets. You've got, you know, you had a perfect first round, and you've got Mason, Richmond, Duquesne, and St. Joe's all being the four teams to come out of the second round.
No, it was George Washington, not Duquesne.
Oh, excuse me, George Washington. Being the teams to come out of the second round and be in the quarterfinals. I was thinking of, I had Duquesne in the quarterfinals, and that was the only one that I got wrong.
Yeah, don't take my GW away from me. Come on, man.
Along with having VCU over Dayton in the first round, which I also got wrong. So those are the two that I got wrong. Other than that, I've been going, you know, going strong here. Despite everything going up to your two expectations so far, how would you evaluate this first round of the tournament? Up to your expectations? A little bit too, you know, favoring one, like the higher seeds in some respects? Or do you think it's been pretty exciting so far?
I feel personally that I think the only game or the only two games that have been like really exciting so far and that have been like above what I was expecting were the Duquesne Loyola Chicago game yesterday, where it came down to the buzzer and Loyola Chicago nearly ruined that near perfect, the so far perfect bracket for both Daniel and I, knocking on wood still. And that awesome buzzer beater today in the Duquesne George Washington game, the common theme of Duquesne in both of those, Duquesne winning one of those games and then Duquesne losing the second one today, unfortunately. But I'm sure Daniel's happy about that, and I'm not going to take that away from him. But other than that, basically just knowing teams like abilities and everything, Mason should have gotten the 8, not the 9. I'm just saying that, like, they should have gotten the 8, but of course, LaSalle and not playing one game or something like that over George Mason. So it is what it is. But ideally, at the end of the day, that the fact that like everything that I've like known like all season long is like standing to what I wanted it to stand as, I'm happy with. But I'm actually questioning one of my picks right now, just because okay. I personally, with how St. Joe's did tonight and how Davidson played today, I don't know if St. Louis is going to have the momentum for tomorrow and for the week, like the weekend, even though, yes, they've won 7 of their last 8 games. I feel that the St. Joseph team can make a Cinderella run like they did last season, and they ended up losing to UMass in the semis. So I think the St. Joseph team is still like trying to mature a little bit, but I think the St. Joseph team can pull off a shocking upset again like they did to Rhode Island last year. And I would love to see a round 3 of St. Joe's in Rhode Island again and have St. Joe's finally win one, because I swear if I get one more overtime game between those two and Rhode Island wins, I think I'm going to lose my mind. But I think really everything's just been like somewhat living up to my standards for the most part. And Daniel can probably agree with me for the most part on that too, since I see his head nodding.
Yeah, it's been, I think, pretty much as expected. The thing with St. Joe's, I think, that's plagued them for a lot of the season has just been inconsistency from one game to the next. You think they finally get on a roll, and then all of a sudden it all comes screeching to a halt. I mean, they had a brilliant non-conference, with the exception of the loss to Villanova, which no one will fault them for, and they had, I think, one or two other missteps.
James Madison was that other loss, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds right. And then they get to conference play and they end up 500. I mean, you know, I think that could speak to the strength of non-con, but also I think just the depth of the Atlantic 10. I mean, the top of the Atlantic 10 is probably about as good as it's been. The middle of the A-10 is a little bit meh, but the bottom of the A-10 is as good as it's ever been, which sounds weird to say, but I think the floor is much higher. The ceiling isn't quite as high, but the floor has been raised in terms of level of competition. But speaking more broadly, I think, about the tournament so far, I thought Dayton was impressive to a degree yesterday. I mean, I know it's the 12, 13 games. So it's not going to be crazy sexy on paper, but I thought it was a good win for Dayton. I think VCU is in an interesting point about what they're going to do with their coaching staff moving forward. I mean, they had a good couple years of a run there, and they've kind of underperformed the last couple years. I think it'd be interesting to see what happens there. And on that same vein, I think, is Dan Byrd in the hot seat with Duquesne? I mean, I know that Duquesne's been the most injury-plagued team in this conference for, like, the last decade, it feels like, but could also be on the hot seat. And then shout-out, obviously, to George Mason with a great win over LaSalle. I mean, that's a very talented LaSalle team, a team that was picked top three preseason by the coaches, had a weird season with missing a game and whatnot. But still, I mean, that's a very good win for George Mason. First time since joining the Atlantic 10 Conference, Mason has a win in back-to-back A-10 tournaments. So just a real fun first couple days here with the tournament. So enjoying it so far.
Yeah, so first, couple questions. First,
okay.
Last podcast, I mean, we really gave Daniel the stage. You reveled in the fact that they had, an 8-8 season after, couple years not doing too well. You talk about the ceiling. I mean, I feel like the floor is raised, and if the ceiling's not coming up, that's unfortunate. But what that does is it makes the room tight. And I feel like this conference is really tight. We don't know who's going to come out on top. So Mason, into tomorrow's quarterfinal matchup, I mean, where could you see them, getting an edge on UMass? Do you feel like they're kind of going in lambs to the slaughter a little bit, or is it just a bit, or do you think there's any edge that they have on the Minute Women that could make this a close game?
Yeah, I think Mason's angle here, and Vanessa Blair-Lewis talked about this post game today. They got to come off to a much better start than they did on senior day in Fairfax. I mean, basically Mason's crawled out of the starting gate and was down like 15 in the blink of an eye. I mean, basically, we remember that game as the Tory Verity Bird game. But I mean, that first quarter, it was like 20-5, like UMass, before you could even, figure out what was going on. If George Mason's going to have a shot in this game, they have to take care of the ball. They got to limit their own turnovers, their own mistakes. You got to control the controllables if you're Mason. Although I think most Mason folks would agree with me. Mason's problem over the years has been not necessarily on the court talent. It's been, between the ears. It's been, the mental game of just, the belief that you can win and you can compete. And it's something that Mason's really, I mean, these last couple games, especially with the road win at Fordham, the home win against St. Joe's, and now with this A-10 tournament win against LaSalle, George Mason has turned a corner in a way that I've not seen from this team that I've been following for 5 years now. I'm not going to say that George Mason's going to win necessarily. I don't think they're going to get the doors blown off of them. I think having played the day before, we've seen can be an advantage sometimes. And the key for George Mason, UMass is going to need to come in sleepwalking a little bit. I think they're going to need that. And because you never know how a top team will come into a tournament. No, I imagine UMass is going to be focused and ready to go. But, you ask for how does George Mason get an edge? That's I think, the best case scenario for George Mason.
And Sonia Smith today, 18 points, 5 boards, 3 assists and a steal. Led the team by a pretty high margin in terms of scoring, overall efficiency. I mean, how far what about her do you think can carry Mason just a little bit deeper?
She's a good floor general. I mean, she has become the true point guard that Mason, I think, has needed for so long. I mean, God bless Marika Korpinen, one of the nicest people I've ever met. She's a true shooting guard if I've ever seen one, and she was forced to play point guard a couple years ago for Mason because there was no one else. Taylor Jamison did a good job last season, but I think she's more comfortable also as a shooting guard. So finally having that true floor general that Mason's really been lacking for a number of years, Sonia Smith has stepped into that role tremendously well this season. And she's backed up with a supporting cast too. I mean, for once, Mason, you really look at the starting lineup, you're like, this is 5 people that we have to guard. I mean, Alani Kasia has been a force inside. Paula Suarez has just matured immensely in the last 6 weeks. And that takes so much of the defensive focus off of just one player. I mean, years past, it was the Natalie Butler team. It was the Nicole Cardano-Hillary team. It is a one-person scouting report. And now with Mason, you have to give them respect. You have to, you know, treat them a little bit differently than you were before.
The thing is, Mason has to play some really hard defense because they're going up against some of the best shooting in the conference. They have to go up against Sam Breen, who is now the leader in all-time scoring in UMass points now, too. And they have Destiny Filoxi, who loves to give the ball out. Sydney Taylor, who can shoot the ball from basically anywhere and make it. Brittany Mayo, who will steal the ball from out under you like a snap of a finger. Like, this UMass team could really, like, screw Mason up in so many different ways because Mason has so many talented players to guard. And, like, UMass has, like, there's still only, like, one or two players, in my perspective, coming out from the outside perspective. There's only one or two players that UMass really needs to focus in on and guard for George Mason in order to, like, keep this game in UMass's favor.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely correct. I mean, I think we all saw, 2 weeks ago, what happens if Mason is not exactly perfect. I mean, UMass is such a heavy favorite in this game. I mean, to me, I mean, maybe a little off topic, but as a growing up Navy football fan, they play Notre Dame every year. Coaching staff has always said you have to play perfect if you're going to beat Notre Dame. And that's basically, I think, what Mason has to do tomorrow or today, whenever you're listening to this podcast, is George Mason's going to have to play nearly perfect. And they're going to need UMass to make some mistakes for them to be able to stay in this game. But it's March and anything goes. So you never know what will happen. Yeah.
So are you going to take your words back after you're going down KG from our A10 Women's Basketball group chat?
Hey, what happens in the group chat stays in the group chat.
Well, I'm just saying.
One more question about UMass specifically. I'm sorry, with Mason specifically with Sonia is, you know, obviously when you're trying to build a program, right? When you're really trying to, you know, string together not only one good season but have a couple after having, you know, kind of a rough go at it for the previous couple of years. One thing that we've seen at a lot of teams, I mean, look at a team like Fordham, right? On the men's side, going into the portal right from the get-go, stringing together a lot of really good wins and then seeing how the freshmen kind of come in. What do you think, you know, Sonia Smith has set forth in terms of, you know, building a winning culture at Mason, even though she'll only be here for, you know, this is her senior year. And then I think she does get a COVID eligibility year, if I'm not wrong.
I think so. I honestly don't even know anymore with anyone.
I feel like now, right? It's like you might as well just wait until the next year's roster gets released.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, COVID eligibility works. But no matter what, do you feel like we'll be seeing a couple more – you think we'll be seeing Mason women's basketball a bit more active in the portal for the next 1-2 years and get, you know, good results like another Sonia Smith?
I think so. I mean, I know the coaching staff still heavily focuses on getting their people in, especially out of high school. I know that culture is something that's really big to this coaching staff. But I think you can find people like that out of the portal too. I mean, a lot of the kids that come out of the portal, coaching staffs already have relationships with. They recruited them initially. Kids chose another school. I mean, there's a number of factors that go into these types of things. But I think just overall, George Mason is trending in such a good direction that it's a school that kids are going to want to come to now. I think before folks are transferring to there just because, oh, it was close to home and, you know, they want to be able to play in front of their family. But now you can look at George Mason and say, hey, that's a place I can go to win, which is not a place you could say before or not a thing you could say before.
Interesting. So moving on, I kind of want to break down, KG, you mentioned some nerves in your bracket and a potential way that your perfection so far can be busted. And that's specifically with St. Joe's and St. Louis. Another great performer from today. Another Smith, Mackenzie Smith of St. Joe's. 17 points, 8 rebounds, 3 steals in only the second double-digit game of the tournament so far. Actually, the second double-digit game of the second round. You know, a 64-53 win over Davidson. What specifically about St. Joe's today has you a little bit nervous?
I mean, the fact that Laura Ziegler actually picked up 2 quick personal fouls in that first quarter kind of surprised me a little bit. So It was like neck and neck, like all throughout the first half. Davidson kept it in. It's just going to be interesting to see really if St. Joe's can carry this momentum and this win into tomorrow. And if they do, then I think we could be seeing a little bit more of the St. Joe's we saw last year pulling off this like amazing win against Rhode Island, who was the 2 seed. St. Joe's was the 7 seed last year. So if St. Joe's can pull this off, like a 3 and a 6 seed, I mean, it's really anyone's game. Like, this entire tournament is really anyone's game. And St. Joe's was picked, I believe, in preseason. It was either 5th or 6th. I see Daniel nodding his head, so I'm going to go with that. I'm hopefully right in one of those two aspects. But I think this game's probably going to be the game that's going to be the surprising one. I think that one, and plus, like, you have your 4 and 5 seed going up against each other. Richmond and Fordham. I think that, like, those are the two games really to watch for tomorrow, or upsets-wise. Not to count out George Mason or George Washington. I would love to see George Washington beat Rhode Island, because it'll just make my day.
It's just likely not going to happen.
Yeah, it's just not going to happen, most likely, unfortunately. But if George Mason can somehow pull like off a perfect game against UMass, I would be even surprised. But UMass got in a good practice at a local high school today. I saw some photos getting posted up. I also saw in one of those photos that Sydney Taylor is wearing a face mask now for her nose. So I don't know the full details behind that, but I do know that she's wearing a face mask right now, probably broken nose from the last game. I don't know. Should be interesting, but she's twinning now with RJ Lewis on the men's side. So, you know, you can say there's a little fun in games in that aspect, but it's more probably just a safety precaution and something. But I think really the game, like the two main games to watch are probably going to be Richmond versus Fordham and St. Joe's versus St. Louis. Not like count out the top 2 seeds in the conference and your regular season champions. There we go. But I just think those games are kind of already predetermined in a way that everyone's kind of expecting, unfortunately, unless one of the Georgias can pull off some surprising like game. And I see Daniel's face over there just saying that there's probably something up their sleeve. So
this is March.
I know this is March.
This is March.
As John Rossing puts it, I know this is March.
All right. So we talked about, you know, the top 2-3 seeds, where they could stumble, where, you know, I think we'll still be going a little chalk for, you know, into the semifinals. But let's talk about, you know, always my favorite part of every quarterfinals, the 4-5 matchup. And that's Fordham against Richmond. Richmond, obviously, today, the second double-digit win, a 71-60 win over Dayton in the second round, coming up against a Fordham team that I think, you know, maybe I might be a little bit biased. I mean, but a SportsCenter top 10 worthy team in the Atlantic 10 is definitely not a team that should be trifled with. So for you two, what is the biggest key either for Fordham to put this one away early, or for Richmond to kind of go again and upset a potential, you know, top 4 seed in the tournament?
I think Fordham personally needs to have Dingle and DeWolf both get off to really hot starts to get them like a double-digit lead and maybe just force a little bit of like chaos a little bit. And like Dingle's going to like steal the ball a lot. We all know that she's like probably leading in the conference in steals. So I think the fact that like you have DeWolf and Dingle who both made the all conference first team, I think you're really looking at two big powerhouses right there. And if you somehow manage to like double team one of them and the other one's left wide open, I think you're going to run into the problem that they're going to be sharp shooting and like scoring 30 points for at least one of them.
Hmm. Yeah, I think this is an interesting matchup just based off the two teams' trajectory. Fordham kind of stumbled a little bit down the stretch of the season. They did have the impressive win over UMass in there.
They did not win over UMass, Rhode Island. They beat Rhode Island, not UMass.
Thank
UMass
you.
Swept them.
My apologies. I am very tired. Form did have some good wins down the stretch of the regular season. And Richmond is kind of lucked. I don't want to say lucked into, because that sounds like they don't deserve to be there. But they did kind of luck into being the 5 seed just based off of win percentage, because they played 2 less games than everyone else. And Richmond, I mean, I did not see the game because I was working, but just I was following the score. Richmond did not seem overly impressive against Dayton today, because Dayton is, I know they're Dayton, but they're Dayton. I mean, they weren't that great this season, and they let Dayton hang around, I think, too long, personally.
They definitely did.
So I give advantage to Fordham here, I think, in this one. Richmond, I feel like this goes for a lot of A-10 teams, was just really inconsistent this year. They had flashes where they could be really, really dominant, and they had flashes where they were like, what are they doing? So I got to give the advantage, I think, to Fordham, though, in this one. I think the maturity and the experience of the group wins out. I can't see Anna DeWolf just going out her last round just one and done. I think Fordham at least gets the semis.
Yeah. I mean, now that you mentioned looking at that game today, I did watch some. I did have my eyes on that game for a portion of it. All I'm going to say is Richmond definitely let Dayton hang around for way too long. Dayton really kept, at one point, I think Dayton had a lead at, the end of one of the quarters at the end of, the first half. I don't remember exactly what it was. I would have to go back and look, but that would take forever to try to find out. But Dayton was just, scoring and, staying in it, and Richmond had to call timeouts to regroup. But I also don't think Addie Budnick wants to go out on a, one, really. They would have had 2 games. I think this team really can pull something together, but this Richmond team's a lot different than their, team from last season, because they lost Emma Squires to Rhode Island. So I think right there, you're going to be looking at a little bit of probably not having all of your experienced A-10 players all with you. And the fact that Rhode Island was able to pull interconference transfers like Emma Squires, Madison Haddix, Covington, and
Penny Magasa.
Thank you. I was about to say, Daniel, can you remind me? But that's one of the things that really helps Rhode Island, and I think kind of sets a drawback for all of teams that lost players, including Richmond on this. So it should be interesting.
So final question. You two have gone perfect so far. KG, I know you're having some doubts, but are you two confident enough in your brackets that you know, we're not publishing any changes. We're not letting you rework anything, but verbally, Any corrections you might want to make from the quarterfinals on, or are you sticking with it all the way through?
In my brain, no. I think it stays the way it is. In my heart, George Mason's going all the way. I know it's not going to happen, but So this is the thing, what you were saying earlier, we try to make rational decisions about a sport that is inherently irrational. So, what you got, KG?
No, that's what happens, right? Because it's let's take Loyola Chicago, right? The year that they made the Final Four. I didn't have Loyola Chicago winning a single game in that bracket.
No one did.
I don't think anyone did.
They get to the second round. I'm thinking, okay, well, or let's say they get to when they get to the Sweet 16, I'm thinking, okay, well, I really had, I can't remember who they played in the Sweet 16, but, I really had their opponent making the Elite Eight. So to help me in my score in my group, I need Loyola Chicago to lose, but I'm kind of at the point where I just want to see them keep going. So you kind of end up rooting against your own bracket, and it's just a whole mess.
See, people, so, I gotta stop. People that root for their brackets in March are the worst kind of people. You gotta root for the upset. I don't care if you pick your one seed to win the whole thing. You gotta always root for the upset. Unless it's your team, then it's different.
I root for my bracket until I'm like not in contention to win any pool that I'm in, which is usually after the second round. So then I'm kind of just like, all right, let's just watch some good basketball.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm really second guessing my St. Louis over St. Joe's pick, but St. Joe's hasn't always been consistent. And while, yeah, they held UMass and Rhode Island to three very close games between those two teams, I just don't know if I want to like change or not. I think I feel like I feel safe enough to stay with St. Louis, but at the same time, I don't know if I want to feel safe enough to stay with St. Louis because St. Louis won't be able to pull off that win against Rhode Island. I'm now thinking of it, and it's just trying to think out like the math part of it and the math aspect after seeing the first 2 days. That's where you always are like trying to correct yourself. And I really think that St. Joe's can probably pull off St. Louis tomorrow and have round three against Rhode Island. And St. Joe's probably ends up taking Rhode Island, finally winning one in that matchup would be nice. But right now, I'm really just second guessing that one thing. But other than that, I'm really not second guessing anything else, especially not the UMass one. My gut with UMass is probably the strongest it's been on the women's side than in ye like since I've been supporting the women's program since Coach Verde came along 7 years ago. So, and my family witnessed his 200th win on Saturday. So I think I just got to stay with UMass there because I'm sorry, Daniel. Mason has to pull off like a perfection plus game. Like there's really like zero room for like error. But I mean, Mason could pull off something that will surprise me, and I'll be at work trying to watch it and listen to it and try to do the live retweeting for our page and everything. So I'm gonna be all over the place tomorrow trying to watch this, but
I just
I
gotta
don't
say, if
know.
Mason wins, I'm gonna be so damn insufferable.
Yeah,
Just so everyone knows now, I'm gonna be so
you're gonna be
insufferable.
taunting me the
As you
most,
should,
probably.
as you should be.
Poor me and Jacob Munch are gonna have to deal with all of this
Yes, you
if
will.
this does happen.
And if I can
Oh,
give one more
Nathan.
expert opinion on this, though, on
Of
the St.
course.
Louis St. Joe's game, the team I think that's gonna win is gonna be the team whose name starts with Saint and whose fight song is a remix of When the Saints Go Marching In.
Okay. Fair. I'm racking my brain trying to figure out who you're thinking of, but
It's both.
they both have the same fight song and they both are Saints. So
I picked up on it right away.
I'll let our listeners ponder that for until the next podcast. Until whoever wins, Daniel will just say, "Oh, I'm right."
Had it all the way.
Yeah, had it the whole time. But let's talk about the men's side. And while we're not yet at tourney time, we're still about 4 or 5 days out. We've still got so much to figure out in terms of seeding. We've got a number one in VCU. We've got a number 15 in Loyola. But after that,
We have a
we
number
kind
two
of
in Dayton.
we do,
Have a
yeah.
number two in Dayton, but will a SLU win tomorrow? No, a SLU win tomorrow won't put SLU in the number two spot. The highest they can go is three.
Correct.
I
Okay,
think
so
so, yeah.
we've got a one, we've got a two, we've got a 15.
And
Then
I think maybe
two.
a 14 and 13 too.
Yeah, because Dayton beat SLU in their only
Yeah.
matchup.
So then we've got, a 3 through 7 kind of chunk, and then like an 8 through 12 kind of chunk, and then like a 13 and 14 we're not figuring out. They're kind of just like beating each other up in the back of a Chili's parking lot. But a lot of huge games on the line. I mean, the game that I'm looking at the most because I feel like it's got so many teams moving in and out of the double bye is Duquesne Fordham at 2 p.m. St. Louis obviously still has a this, this game I feel like means a lot more for St. Louis than it means for Dayton right now, obviously, because they're still fighting for a secure double bye, which I think they
St.
pretty
Louis
much,
has a secured double bye, whether
yeah,
it's three or
they're pretty
four.
much there, actually. Sorry about that. But yeah, a lot of interesting stuff. So outside of Duquesne Fordham, which I guess is really the only double bye security game, what for you two is the most interesting game on this final conference Saturday slate?
Yeah, I think this is flying under folks' radar, but it actually bears a lot of weight to it. the GW-VCU game has a lot of significance in GW's tiebreakers because, as it stands, Mason jumped in front of GW last night by virtue of beating Fordham because GW lost to Fordham. But if GW beats VCU, GW would flip back in front of George Mason by virtue of having the win over the higher best common opponent thing. So that game flying under people's radars, but actually has a lot of weight to it if GW can pull it out.
I personally think right now that I know I'm like literally looking at the pillow fight games, but I think right now your 13 and 14 seeds are kind of sort of locked, whether it's UMass in 13 and Rhode Island in 14 or vice versa. But I don't think it'll be vice versa because UMass has the sweep over Rhode Island on the season. I think really your Davidson Rhode Island game is going to kind of secure like your like teams like in the bottom like six, so 10 to like 15, but 15 already being secured, so like 10 to 14 really. And like that Bonaventure UMass game, I think will also play some like factors into it. If UMass can somehow manage to pull off a win on senior night, that would be awesome. But UMass is still without Noah Fernandes, Matt Cross, so we're just thriving over here, just hoping that we can get a win when we can really need it a lot. That Duquesne game, I started watching it. We went down by 20. I shut it off. I was in one of my friend's rooms. I shut it off. I was not trying to watch it anymore. Then they were in what they were within two. I'm like, oh, I'll turn the game back on. They go down by like 10. I turn the game off. I'm just like, yeah, if I turn this game back on one more time, they're going to lose. So I think right now I'm just a jinx of trying to watch UMass games for the men's side, but not for the women's. So I'm going to be watching the women's game.
Be ashamed if your internet went out.
my internet did get very choppy a few times, but I was also running like several tabs on my on my computer because I was working on a paper at the same time as listening to the.
I'm gonna find a way to hack into your mainframe so that Mason can win tomorrow. That's what I'm hearing.
Nope, I can't. Daniel, I love that you're trying to really mess with me, but I don't think Mason's gonna pull it off. I seriously don't think that's gonna happen. The more you hope for it, is the better for you, but it's not happening. I'm sorry, it is not happening.
So, Daniel, I was talking with some of the Mason guys last night. So, as things go, Mason is a 6 seed at 10-7 in conference play. You know, they have a chance to go 11-7, have a chance to finish 10-8. Second year, you know, finishing up the second regular season with Coach Kim English. You know, somebody, I can't remember who said it, but had an interesting kind of take on these first 2 years with Kim English finishing in the 5-6 year range or 5-6 seed range and finishing in the 5-6 seed range under Coach Paulson. And they said it feels, it's the same result. It's the same spot in the Atlantic 10. Something about it feels a bit different. Something about it has you feeling a bit more hopeful. Would you agree with that? Is that how you're kind of feeling? And if so, could you kind of elaborate on what the biggest differences have been, you know, in terms of same seating, different feeling?
Yeah, I'd say I agree with that. I mean, George Mason, well, first of all, from year one to two, especially with a coach that is new, you want to see progression. Last year, we saw George Mason fall into the 9 spot or the 8. It was 8. It's the same thing. This year, they're going to, you know, a progression. You're seeing a step forward. That's all you're really asking. I know folks have your unrealistic expectations, but all we really want in the first couple years of a new coach, we want to see some steps. And we're seeing that this year with Kim English and I think in his group. I think you've seen not only the team maturing, I think you've seen coach maturing. I mean, guy's the second year ever as a head coach. And you can see the way that he's handled game situations, the way he's dealt with foul trouble, different things like that. He's learned how to manage games better, I think, too. And to the point you're asking about, you know, same result but different feel with Paulson. With Paulson, it always felt like we were getting lucky that we were finishing so high. I think the 1 year we finished 5th, we basically were like in seventh the entire year. And like the last day of the season, there was some weird tie breaking stuff that happened. And we like backed into a fifth place finish and we did nothing with it. I mean, Mason has perfected the art of getting to the quarterfinals and doing absolutely nothing with it. And I mean, I think the real test, and I know that this is kind of the general thing that Mason fans are saying, we just want to reach the semifinals. We don't even need to make the NCAA tournament. Just get the A-10 semis. Get to Saturday. And I think that's realistic. I mean, I don't know if this is necessarily the year that we have to, you know, if we're a failure if we don't do that, that may be next year. But with Paulson, it always felt like we were hitting we had a hard ceiling that we were always hitting. Every time we'd start to turn a corner, we'd hit a big losing stretch. And with this group, there's been a longer feeling out process, I think, than we saw with Paulson. I think you saw Paulson's teams hit their stride earlier in the season, they'd hit their ceiling, and then they'd falter. With this team, they faced a lot of adversity through the middle of the year. They got smacked at Duquesne, and then they deal with some injuries. They dealt with losing Ticket for an extended period of time. They get him back and immediately lose Victor Bailey Jr. And yet they've rattled off 5 wins in a row, gunning out some impressive wins. I mean, the Forum, for all the crap we've given Forum for the years, Forum's a legit top 4 team in this league. And that's a legit win for Mason last night in overtime in a game that they probably would have lost in years past. So for Mason, you're exactly, I think, wording this correctly. The feel is just different.
And look, you know, yes, all the crap that you give Fordham, but I think that's a game that Mason fans really wanted to win, right? Yeah. And it wouldn't have been a game that Mason fans really wanted to win if Fordham wasn't the tough opponent that they've only really been like last year and this year. You know what I mean? So, again, these two teams are – their fates – are intertwined, I think.
Neither can live while the other survives.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's so great. I think it's so awesome. Actually, right now, the way that the bracket's going, I believe Fordham and Mason, if Fordham still is in a double bye and Mason is still the sixth seed, Fordham could play Mason in a quarterfinal matchup. And I think that
Is GW flips in there, which also fulfills this you know, philosophy. What's what I'm looking for?
This anyway. Prophecy.
There you go. This prophecy.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. But like you said, with the quarterfinals thing and making it to the semifinals in the Atlantic 10, I think in every Atlantic 10, no matter how good the conference is, getting to the quarterfinals doesn't really get you much. I mean, the quarterfinals is a really fun round. It's a really competitive round, but on a national stage, it's not getting you anywhere. If you're not already a really good team, if you're not already a bubble team, it's not even getting you to the NIT. I mean, and now a semifinal, I think this year, in a year where the conference is down, is also not getting you to the NIT. But if you're a Mason team where you're just trying to get better every single year, that's 2 rounds better than you finished last year. So that's a really good performance. In my opinion, I mean, obviously the championship game is the championship game. It belongs in its own, you know, tier, column, whatever. Saturday is a really fun day because especially, you know, because again, talking to people from Mason, a lot of people probably aren't traveling up to see Mason compete in the second round or, you know, even in the quarterfinals. They might wait till it's worth it. They might wait till now we've got that day off on Friday and see, hey, look, let's travel up. And that's why it's so fun, because those teams that you weren't really expecting to get into the semifinals, you now have time to go watch. The arena fills up a lot more. I mean, in D.C., it was awesome because you had Richmond fans that were probably waiting a little bit. Yeah. Oh, Richmond fans, I think, had a good showing in the first couple rounds that they played. But especially in that semifinals, that's when you're like, oh wow, this run might be legit, because yeah. Now you've got like, now you're watching that support behind them. And you know, it's definitely, what's the word, not like placebo, but it's definitely like a perspective thing. Like, yeah, you know, if you're playing really well but you're only seeing, you know, a couple fans rooting for that team, you're like, okay, you know, they got a good win. And then now that you see the community get behind them, which, look, Fairfax is a pretty decent trip to New York, but it's doable in a day. It's doable in a weekend. So I think if they can get to the semifinals, I think you're exactly right. We could see a pretty good showing in Brooklyn. I think that'd be really fun. I think, you know, a lot of these semifinal matchups are really fun, but it'd be really interesting to see Mason do it. But yeah, elaborate more with me on this VCU GW matchup. I mean, we've got a lot of talk saying that James Bishop could be player of the year, and if GW, you know, even with a loss, maybe their seeding won't be helped too much playing VCU in the final day of the season. But is there anything James Bishop can do to kind of wow some more people for a potential player of the year bid?
I mean, James Bishop is just could do James Bishop. I mean, I don't know what more he could do at this point. I mean, what's another 35-point night going to do to convince the voters if, you know, beyond the other 17 or whatever he's got, you know, already in his back pocket? I mean, the dude is – I mean, I know I was just a little bit too young to have memory of Chris Monroe. But basically, aside from Chris Monroe, James Bishop is, like, the most potent offensive threat GW men's basketball has ever seen. I mean, you're only other guy you can put in that category is Bob Talent, maybe, but that's like truly going to the archives. So like James Bishop is just a true scorer, and he will find ways to take over a game. I mean, GW was kind of dead in the water Wednesday night at Davidson, and James Bishop says, "I'll change that real quick," and off he goes. I mean, he just makes it look so easy, and he just does it so effortlessly. And I mean, truly, I don't think he's probably going to win it, because we know there's heavy bias towards there's a correlation between where you finish in the standings and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Same thing, we had the conversation with Coach of the Year and everything else. I think he's the most deserving of any player in this league this year, just based off he's basically dragged GW kicking and screaming, playing 38 minutes a night to being – you know, on the last, you know, basically the last week of the season, GW was still mathematically in the race for a double bye, which was unfathomable back in November. So.
Yeah. And I mean, I just want to say this too, like kind of talking about the player of the year running a little bit. James Bishop is clearly a front runner. I'm going to say that right now. I think his biggest competition right now is Deron Holmes from Dayton, and probably even Yuri Collins. Those are probably going to be your two biggest opponents right there that I'm thinking of right off the top of my head. But I think right now in particular, I think Bishop maybe has the edge, just because George Washington has had such a crazy season with being injury ridden, like starting way back in November and only playing 7 scholarship athletes, if I'm remembering correctly. The fact that like Bishop has been playing like 38 minutes on a night and still is scoring 30 plus points without a problem, I think that should hopefully give him enough votes for player of the year. I feel like he's well deserving of player of the year. Granted, yeah, you have two powerhouse names in Deron Holmes and Yuri Collins right next to his name, but James Bishop's name has been thrown around the conference all last season and basically all this season. So I think he's definitely well deserving of it this year. And I mean, Yuri Collins has 1 year of eligibility left if he decides to use it, I think. And I don't know about Deron Holmes. I think it's the same case for him. But it's the same case for James Bishop too, right, Daniel? He has 1 year left.
Yeah, James has an option if he wants it.
Yeah. So basically all three of the players like have an option for that extra year from COVID, but who knows if any of the three of them are going to use it, or if they're going to try to declare for the draft or not, or try to like just get started in a job somewhere or go play overseas. Like, I think those three are your clear front runners with how well they've all been doing this season.
Yeah. And you bring up a great point, KG. I mean, the field, like if anything, like to maybe shift the player of the year, you know, conversation towards any other player is really not like against James Bishop, but the field is so good this year. I mean, I think it's like in comparison to some other years, I mean, because we don't have such a clear front runner, but I mean, there are so many guys who are doing so many great things. across the Atlantic 10, right? I mean, my four right now, it's Bishop, Holmes, Collins, and I'll throw Ace Baldwin in there too. Absolutely. You know what I mean? I feel like he maybe got a little, didn't get enough praise in some of the award ballots. I mean, honestly, on my own, I feel like I kind of pushed him a little bit low on like the three bid league one, lower than I, after it came out, I was like, maybe I probably could have put him a bit higher. But if I could be like a little bit of a lawyer real quick, it's a player of the year award. It's not a most valuable player. And I know that, you know, especially in something like the NBA, right? The debate for what makes an MVP or a player of the year is as tired a debate as actually trying to figure out who those players should be year to year. But for you two, I mean, do you feel like the fact that it is a player of the year and not a most valuable player kind of lends some credence to, you know, giving Bishop the award? Because even though he's not leading the best team, he's having statistically just the most outstanding, you know, just performance in the conference.
I mean, I think you could really word it like as most valuable player or player of the year, because player of the year, well, yeah, it does typically get awarded to one of the top like two or three teams in the conference. I'm going to use the women's side for an example. Sam Breen just got named player of the year for a second time in her career, and it's also only the second time ever for a women's player to ever be named back-to-back years for it. And that same player, the player that did, also was drafted in the WNBA draft. John Cal Jones, who played at George Washington, got player of the year her junior year, but did not get it her senior year. So it doesn't always necessarily rack up to meaning like your most valuable player is always going to get it like back-to-back years. But I think like your most valuable player and like player of the year like coincide like so closely that honestly you could call it one or the other and people would just assume it as the same thing. But I think most valuable player kind of goes more towards like your top four teams, while player of the year really looks at like the entire conference and gives that retrospective of maybe like a George Washington or a Richmond team can pull off something like that, because there's still so much left in this like conference that who knows what could happen on Friday and Saturday in this conference play, just because of the fact of what we have going on in this like weekend slate.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think it's also one of those things too, where it, because it is college basketball, sometimes like you also have to take a look at, you know, yes, this player is not on a successful team, but a lot of things are, I think for college basketball players more so than professional athletes at any sport. I mean, how much your own personal statistical success affects the overall success of your team is a lot less direct and a lot less out of your control. So that could be a part of it too. I mean, any closing thoughts for tonight before we wrap up here?
Sam
any last
Breen
little
is,
bit of trash talk?
Sam Breen is the real deal. Another thing I just want to highlight is Sam Breen earlier this week was named to the finalist list for the Becky Hammon Mid-Major Player of the Year Award. Something I almost forgot to mention. With that being said, she's really like the best player to go through this A-10 conference since John Cal Jones and the other player that I can't remember her name on who got Player of the Year back-to-back. I think really like putting her name up there with those two players right there goes to tell you that like she's definitely going to have a basketball career, whether it's WNBA or overseas for sure. Definitely overseas. Like, I can guarantee you she'll find somewhere to play overseas. Maybe even we'll catch up and play with Haley Liddell. But who knows? I mean, Sam definitely has a long time left in her like basketball playing career, whether it's WNBA or overseas. She still has the time. She has the education for sure to go ahead and go straight into just working as well as she wanted. But honestly, I'm just so happy for her. And from what Nathan was saying, really no one has the, no one is a clear front runner front runner, sorry about that, front runner in this, other than Sam. Her other real competition didn't even make it into the final round. So that gets announced on March 29th, who wins. So I'm going to be closely following that just because Sam really deserves it this season. She really deserved it last season. Unfortunately, didn't even get to the finalist round. So being named a finalist is an awesome thing for UMass and does scare me a little bit with Verdi possibly getting swooped away from UMass, but he loves UMass too much and has made it too much of his home that I don't think it'll happen. And I hope it won't happen, but who knows?
Yeah, it would be sick to kind of see her tear up the EuroLeague, I got to say. And what's great about you know, women's pro ball is that you can do both. You can be in the WNBA and in Europe at the same time. Daniel, any final thoughts?
Yeah, I got two things I want to end with. One, just because we didn't quite get to it tonight. Just shout out to Mila Astigala. I know we kind of talked about jumping passing tonight, but she was the one who hit the game-winning shot tonight against Duquesne, and just had to give her a shout out because that was a hell of a shot. That was the way the game was going was not good, and Mia just single-handedly saves UW season with that shot. So shout out to her. Second final thought is I am in a one-person wrecking crew of this podcast. I took out Sam on Wednesday night, and I'm coming for you, KG, tomorrow. Let's go, Mason. Let's go.
Daniel, you got the men's team already this season. UMass woman got you earlier this season. I don't think it's happening. So don't even try me right now. It's going to happen. It's not happening.
It's going to happen.
All right. Well, I think, you know, no matter what's going on with this game, I feel like the next podcast we do is going to be a bit tense between the two of you. So with that, before we you know, let things really, you know, come to blows here, we're going to wrap it up on this week's A10 Talk podcast. I'm Sam Basil alongside Kaylee Godek, Daniel Frank. Keep following all of us on Twitter to get all of your updates on Mason, Fordham, UMass, all of your favorite 15 teams in the Atlantic 10 Conference. Keep checking out A10Talk.com and follow us at A10Talk on Twitter for updates. It is a crazy time to be a college basketball fan, so let the folks at A10 Talk, you know, kind of steer the ship for you and figure out what games you need to watch, what's important, the stats you got to know, who's playing who's scoring what. And until then, we'll see you guys next time.